Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. And I'm David Todd. Dave, happy Memorial Day to you and to all our listeners. Hope you had a good holiday weekend, as everybody has wished a lot of people. I know you and I want to thank everybody who served our country, including my father, and I'm sure you feel the same.
Absolutely. I've got two old men that served, and a baby brother that's still serving, chief in the Navy. So we wouldn't be able to do what we do, experience these freedoms in our country for sure, without the sacrifices that others have made for our country and continue to make as well too. And it's sad to see Meta World Peace up on Twitter put Labor Day. So
yeah, he a little confused there. Not totally surprising. But so a little, a nice holiday weekend. Good job getting things covered for me on Friday. I appreciate that. Had a college reunion to go to. Had a good time up there. But back in the saddle, back in Pittsburgh now, and the Steelers are in their second week of OTAs. Today's Tuesday, obviously, and they'll be back at it Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week.
Absolutely, and there's not really too much, coming out of today's practices. I have a feeling that these will get wrapped up by the media later on today, and of course when their stories hit the wire at midnight tonight. But a little things that we can pass along: Ramon Foster, who did not participate last week due to a hamstring strain. Boy, try to say that three times real fast. Was back at it again today, evidently, as he thought he would. He had let me know via Twitter last week that would likely be the case. So he was back at it. Jason Worlds, who missed last week, is evidently looking like he's going to miss this week. We did not know the nature really of the injury last week, other than he had a wrap on one of the hands there. Comes to find out Mark Cabali's passing on word. They think it's a broken thumb. So we still don't know the severity of it, how it happened. Of course, this is OTA sessions. This is football in shorts. It's not imperative that he's out there running around. It's just one other thing on, for Jason Worlds, it seems, right now. So hopefully he'll get past that and be back on the field, maybe next week or at least by mini camp time.
Dave, it's just curious to me why the Steelers don't make that information readily available to the press.
I guess it's because maybe they figure it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, it's just you've got a fan base that wants to know what's going on. They're keeping track of these things like you and I are. And we want to know. And, yeah, maybe it's not that big a deal. He's not practicing, but they could just release a two-sentence statement saying, Jason Worlds hurt his hand lifting weights, and he's going to be out, for 2 weeks. He's here. He's going through what conditioning he can. But, it is, and it's the whole thing of it goes back to some of this stuff when we talk about the secretive nature of what we've seen in college football and how some of these programs went down with, it turns out, illegal things going on. And you look at kind of the secretive nature and maybe not the kind of openness that Tomlin has shown to the press corps, not that they deserve every answer to every question, and not that I think it's a huge problem with the Steeler organization, but I think they could do a better job. They could, they could take some pointers from the Penguins in that respect. The Penguins do a very good job of trying to build media relations rather than to keep the media kind of at further than arm's length, I would say.
Well, I think on the, as an answer to that, if you were to ask Tomlin that same thing and put it to it that way, then the next practice you'd get comments from him running through about 30 players with a torn toenail or, what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I mean, again, that's just, that's taking it to the other extreme. There's a happy medium. Jason Worlds isn't practicing. He broke his thumb.
And maybe they figured some of this stuff's going to come out in the wash, and maybe they figure some of these guys from the media will track these guys down and get the info from them themselves. So You know, I think Tomlin has gotten better overall with this, especially in season after practice.
Let me read a tweet. This is pretty funny. As we're talking about this, a tweet just came across from Albert Breer, who we both like, think he does a pretty good job. And he said, just listen to Doc Rivers on, you know, some radio show, I guess, in Boston, and said, man, is he good with the media? Perfect example that being open does not hurt your team. I just kind of feel that way myself. And, you know, I'm not asking them what play they're running on 3rd and 10 in the first series against the Broncos, but, you know, this is a guy. Is it, you know, just my little rant about this. So there you go.
I just think it's the time of year. He probably does. They probably don't deem it important this time of year because it is OTAs. Us bloggers love to put every little, you know, every little mispractice and hamstring and all like that. But you know what? The readers want it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
My readers thank me all the time for, you know, the detailed stuff and all like that. Sure, it is only May, but, you know, I like to know who's practicing and who's not practicing and who's ailing from what. So, yeah, I mean, I can see your side of it, but I also can see why they don't, why they're not as open probably as we would like them to be.
Yeah, so, the other news, I'll try and get, I may get out there on Thursday this week. We'll see if I can get that organized to see what's going on. But I guess the other news is Sean Spence signed his contract, which leaves David DeCastro the only unsigned Steeler from the draft.
Absolutely, and it was only a matter of time for this before his was going to get done. I was surprised it actually lasted this long, took this long. 4-year deal, it's going to total out about $2.6 million. The signing bonus is expected to be just over $500K. Base salaries are the norm. $390, $480, $570, and $660. So really no big surprise there. And also posted this past weekend with the Patriots getting Chandler Jones under contract now, and only a partial of that, I think, is guaranteed of that 4th year. That was the line in the sand that I think everybody was waiting for the Patriots to draw there. It's been drawn, so, I mean, David DeCastro's deal, you know, basically should be done at any time now. And I would expect that easily by the time minicamp rolls around, although DeCastro's not going to be able to take part in any of these OTA sessions or the minicamp sessions. So it's just a matter of time as far as that goes with DeCastro. But now we have 8 of the 9 draft picks under contract now.
Right. And, Dave, I guess there were a couple other things that I don't know if you fully got a chance to talk about this. I think I saw these things tweeted today. But just a couple points. I know we've talked about Steve McClendon a lot. And we talked a lot about how the staff really didn't want the people in the media to be overlooking McClendon, even though they took Ta'amu in the 4th round, and he's maybe seen as the heir apparent to Casey Hampton. McClendon is a guy who, you know, I think the Steelers are pretty high on defensively. We hear Mitchell talk about him in glowing ways during the draft, around draft time, and he's coming to camp at 325, even though he's listed at 280. Steve McClendon is a guy, and we've beat the drum for him a little bit here in the past couple of weeks, but he's certainly a guy that we want to keep our eyes on.
Absolutely is. And the 325, when you go back and look at some of his pro day measurements, now we don't know how some of these sites like NFL Draft Scout and all like that, I think have him listed at 302. It was rumored that he was, you know, over 300 pounds last year towards the end of the year. I think Jim Wexel noted that. So 325 now, you know, it's right where he needs to be. You know, if you're relying on NFL.com or Steelers.com for proper weights and heights all the time, you're not going to get it. So, but this is a guy, you know, and you did hit on it. John Mitchell, right after the selection of Ta'amu, was very, very animated of saying, hey, do not, you know, come talk to me after the season as far as McClendon goes. And, you know, that's good in the fact that Mitchell's standing on a table for the guy, but we really haven't even heard Mitchell really go to bat for someone like that in the past.
Yep.
Either. So that really tells you a lot that Mitchell is sick and tired of hearing either bloggers or media or whatever saying, hey, you know, just because Ta'amu's in there, that we need to just throw McClendon over there in the corner, and he's the new Chris Hoke, so to speak. So this is a guy the Steelers are going to rely on heavily to start the season. You know, Ta'amu, A, he is, outside of the rookie camp, he is not going to be able to participate in the OTA sessions. I'm not sure whether or not he's going to be able to be there for the mini camp here in a few weeks or not. But, you know, that's not enough time to pick up anything. And we know with rookies in a Dick LeBeau defense, A, they don't play normally, and B, on the field is where they're going to pick this stuff up at. And if he does not have those reps to do that, it pushes him farther on down, you know. And we've said this before, it's not out of the question that he could do like Casey Hampton did week 8, week 9, whatever it was, his rookie season, and hit the starting lineup. But at that same time, Casey Hampton, if indeed he starts the season on the PUP list, ought to be coming back at that time too. So there's going to be a lot of inactive lists, probably not early on in the season for Ta'amu because of the status. It's all tied to the status of Hampton. But Steve McClendon is going to be your guy to start at nose for the Steelers, most definitely. And it's hard to see that going any other way.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if Casey's back. As we've talked about, you know, he needs leverage, but he doesn't need mobility as much. And we'll see if his timetable can be a little quicker than Rashard's. And we've talked a lot about Rashard, and we'll see where that heads as well. The other guy, Dave, it was interesting to note that in practice, and this is just a little side note, and it just shows you that maybe Ziggy, not that he's not taking things seriously in the past, but he's wearing a weight vest under his jersey. I'm sure just to make it a little more difficult here during the drills, give him a little extra conditioning and work. But I just found that to be an interesting note. I don't know if Ed Bouchette tweeted that or somebody else, but something else I saw, I think, earlier today.
And I think it's been reported and a well-known fact that Ziggy's a workout warrior, you know, as is McClendon.
Let's make sure we use that term. You know, sometimes that's used around the draft as a negative term, meaning you guys had great workout, great in the weight room, great in drills, but not a good football player. And that's not the sense you're using it.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not saying just because he's in a weight room, he's a good football player. I'm just saying he's dedicated to that end of it.
Oh, yeah. I'm saying I think we use it in the draft. We say the guy's not a good football player. It's a guy who's a workout warrior. Sometimes is seen as a guy who looks great in the gym and in the locker room and stuff like that, but is not a good football player.
Well, yeah, and Poe is a perfect example of that this past draft season and all like that. This is a guy that never flashed on the field. We talked about that several times, but this is a guy that's constantly in the weight room on top of it. So, with Ziggy, and I think you're right, I think it just shows Ziggy. I mean, of course, we don't know in the past if Ziggy's went through this, in OTAs. Of course, they didn't have an OTA session last year, but in his previous years, I mean, we don't know if he's done that or not. But yeah, I mean, I did see that tweet too, and maybe it's just something that Ziggy's doing, as you said, to help with his conditioning, to get him right there on top of things come mini camp time and start a training camp time.
Yeah. So anything else to kind of wrap up the OTA stuff that maybe we didn't hit on? Or didn't get to last week, and as you said, we'll come back on Friday and really kind of wrap up what's happened this week.
Yeah, there's not too much coming out as far as OTAs work is today and all like that, and I think by the end of the week we'll have a better idea of what happened. I think a few things. I think Bob Labriola pointed out that John Clay's looking good. I'm trying to look for the quote specifically here that Labriola used here. I think he said, looks like he has nice burst running the ball. And he also noted that Emmanuel Sanders looks fast and has been catching everything thrown his way. So once again, this is, I hate to keep disclaimer in this, but it is football in shorts. You do expect these guys to look this way. But, you know, I noted for all of last offseason, as far as Sanders goes, you know, I was always worried about those feet of his and all like that, and that came to fruition last year. You know, every time you can hear that Emmanuel Sanders is on the field taking reps is a good thing as far as I'm concerned. I have no doubts with him as far as his route running ability, his pass catching ability. We saw what type of receiver Emmanuel Sanders was drafted to be in the AFC wildcard game against Denver. I mean,
that's... Yeah, and I couldn't agree with that more. You and I think we both picked him to be our breakout guy last year, and unfortunately the injury stuff maybe set him back right out of the chute. But I have really high expectations for Emmanuel Sanders. It looks like he's going to have the return job, but we'll never know exactly how that's going to go until we get to camp and see what Chris Rainey does and who else makes the team and who else is involved in that. But he may have both return jobs this year, but I certainly expect him to be the third receiver. And the great thing for the Steelers is Emmanuel Sanders didn't break out, but Antonio Brown sure as hell did and became an all-pro even. And, I expect to see that same kind of level if he's healthy out of Emmanuel Sanders this year.
And let's not forget, Sanders is the best blocking wide receiver on the team now that Hines Ward is gone. I mean, plain and simple, this guy has shown in his, in his limited playing time since he was drafted, Sanders is willing and able. And this is a guy that in certain personnel groupings, if the Steelers only have two wide receivers on the field, there's going to be situations where he's one of the two wide receivers off, on the field. I firmly believe that just because of his blocking ability. That's not taking anything away from what Antonio Brown does. I mean, but plain and simple, unless Antonio Brown just makes blocking improvements leaps and bounds, Sanders is going to be in there on some two wide receiver sets.
Yeah, he's going to get plenty of time. He's going to get plenty of passes thrown his way. So, as you said, I'm not worried about that. And he'll, hopefully he's healthy and hopefully he's a big part of the offense because the Steelers now seem to have the pieces in place to have a very explosive offense if this offensive line comes together like we hope it does. And, of course, that's not going to be a week one thing or, it's going to take time. I mean, Marcus Gilbert's in his second year and he's going to be, third in tenure on that line. So we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, big expectations for that. And let's segue right from that, Dave, into the running game with that offensive line because you put something up talking about what the Steelers did in terms of down and directional running last year. We've talked a lot about it, how this team was a right-handed team, having Kimoato pull out of the left guard position, generally running right a lot more often than running left. We expect to see more balance this year in Todd Haley's offenses. In the past, they've seemed to be more balanced. And with the Steelers' offensive line being reconstructed, we would expect them to be more balanced. But let's talk a little bit about that, and maybe we can touch on the Isaac Redman article on Pro Football Focus and them talking about that maybe he's a better runner than people around the league perceive. And this is going to be an opportunity for him with Mendenhall possibly out to start the season to step forward.
Absolutely. And, Willie Colon, one thing that he keeps reiterating, and it's in the new video up today on Steelers.com from day four today, OTAs, talking about they pulled Chris Kimoato so much last year that he had paint coming off of his helmet. So, and that plays exactly what we've said all along. Ever since Alan Faneca, of course, has not been there. And, when they've run more to that left side before, the Steelers have been the last three seasons. I have one earlier post up that went up, I think it was Friday or Saturday, talking about by direction. And in 2011 alone, the Steelers ran to the right side, David, 52% of the time, 30% to the middle, and 18% to the left. I do this thing that's called successful plays. And if anybody reads that post that I have up on SteelersDepot.com, you'll see what I mean by that. A successful play is deemed on first down if a player gains 40% of the yards needed for a first down. It's deemed successful on second down if they gain 60% of the yards needed, and it's deemed successful on third and fourth down if 100% of the yards is gained on that carry there. And if you look at some of the successes here, in the post and all like that, the Steelers were and another thing that I track in that post as well is stuffs, which is 0 yards and negative yards. The Steelers were a much better team to the right side, and thus, that's why they ran that way. They did not have the confidence. Now, of course, Bruce Arians had said that the shuffling of the lines and the injuries had a lot to do with it last year, and I tend to believe that on top of because – when you look at the success ratio and the stuff ratio, throw out the yards per carry because that's a deceiving stat. Sometimes all it takes is busting, one long one on say 25 carries, and,
right.
that can skew that all to death. But, that's one thing that we're definitely looking for as Steeler fans with the new offensive line configuration, with the rookies, with David DeCastro in there, with Willie Colon now at left guard, is we're going to see a lot of directional pulling both ways, and we're going to look at them actually just running behind the left side of that line more, behind whoever ends up at left tackle, which still remains a big question mark at this time. But Willie Colon at left guard there, and when you get into talking about Isaac Redmond, also some people in response to my directional running back post wanted me to break down Mendenhall and Isaac Redmond by direction and by down, and I have that up as well too. And it's not that noticeable of a difference, but when you look at Redmond on first and Mendenhall on first down last year, but second down is really where you see some of the stuff kind of jump out at you. On second down last year, Redmond was only, although this was only 31 rushes that he had last year on second down, he only had a 10% stuff rate as opposed to 21% from Mendenhall. And Mendenhall had 77 carries on second down there. As far as a success rate goes, Redmond had a 61% success rate compared to a 56% success rate for Mendenhall. So, those don't look like big differences as far as percentage rates go, but the stuff rate is definitely a big difference. And a success rate, hey, if you're running successful, four or five more times out of every 50 carries, who knows what that leads to as far as first downs and all that goes. So that's just a little something to look at there. It's hard to read too much into this directionally goes, because it plays into the big picture, of course, of the offensive line and all.
Yeah. And we've talked, we've had a chance here over the last 2 months to look at the roster. We've gone through things by position, and do you feel, not the larger question of the backs of Clay and Dwyer and Rainey and Batch and whoever else may be on the roster, but do you feel comfortable if Redmond's the bell cow in this offense?
The references to Redmond being a bell?
Are you comfortable with Redmond being the bell cow in the offense?
Absolutely I do. Because, A, I think he's not going to be a three-down back all the time on the field. I think it's going to be Barrett Batch, Chris Rainey at times. And who knows, maybe somebody else gets thrown into that pecking order if they don't like what they see initially. But based on the backs that they have on the roster right now, I see Redmond as definitely a first and second down back. He can at times stay on the field for third downs, and that will happen. But on the flip side, this is a guy that you got to make sure you keep fresh at times on top of it. And if the Steelers get a big lead in games, you're going to want him in the game a la, Jerome Bettis, wearing down people in the third and fourth quarter. This is where he's only going to get stronger in a game when he can punish people like that. And we've seen him do that in the past in his carries. And I think he can be a guy to be a bell cow. I think he's working on his conditioning to kind of shed the notion that he is healthy enough to be that type of quote-unquote every down back, even though the Steelers won't rely on him all the time to be that.
Yeah, no question in my mind that he's got to be licking his chops. This is a kid from Bowie State coming in, a Division II school. You don't see many of those guys make the NFL, and he's going to have a real chance to show his stuff and really kind of, be a guy who can maybe get another contract, cement his role. This is a big opportunity for him, and, with Haley's offense, it'll be interesting to see how that goes. There's no, when I think about guys that I'm looking forward to seeing this fall, learning more about, it is obviously we have the guys in the offensive line, and all the new guys are new guys, so by definition we're looking forward to that, but Sanders and Redmond are the two guys I think will be most interesting this fall. Dave, let's go to the another thing that you and I got a chance to talk about a little bit before we started taping, Mike Tomlin got inducted to the William and Mary Hall of Fame, and you put a post up on it and you have the video, and then Mike Florio got involved at Pro Football Talk, and maybe he didn't quite see the video before he started writing about it.
Well, actually, he had it up first. My post was in response to.
Okay, I thought you had the first one. I thought you had the video up first.
No,
okay.
No. And all of this started from the Monday Morning Quarterback piece by Peter King, and then Florio ran with the quotes off of that from there. And, you know, Florio's basically taking issue with some of the – well, he's twisting or he's doing what Mike Florio does best. Let's face it. You know,
creates a little controversy maybe where there is none.
Absolutely. And this is exactly what was done here. Now, you know, you can look – and I have this whole – the whole quote by Tomlin up and the video as well – from his induction at William and Mary there for people to make their own judgment on this. Unfortunately, many are going to just read what Florio posts and go with it from there. But I want to kind of ask you, after you've seen this now and after you've read what the quotes are. Now, obviously, him referring to the breaking any of the NCAA rules was in reference to him having a hand in recruiting Kevin Hart, who just so happens to be the son of Mike Hart, who is the Steelers' chief financial officer, which I did not know that, so you learn something new every day.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
But anyway, Tomlin claims to have a hand in that and said he's proud to say that hopefully he had a part in that and didn't break any rules in the process, period. Then he says, I think, and then the crowd, of course, laughs there. And then Tomlin goes on to say immediately after that, that's one of the reasons that I work in the National Football League. I'm tired of the NCAA rules. Now, obviously, he's referring to recruiting rules and recruiting violations. In my opinion, that's how I took that. He immediately says after that, I'm a win-at-all-costs kind of guy. And then he goes further and says the NFL is just right for me, although I'm not a bounty guy in any form or fashion, period. And it reiterates any form or fashion, and the crowd laughs. Now, of course, if you listen to the context that he says this and you watch him conducting this speech, which is obvious, I think, in my opinion, that he's not reading from any prepared speech there. He's going off the cuff here. And then he follows that immediately up with what you've got to understand about the Pittsburgh Steelers is that they'll get you for nothing. You know, basically saying that he doesn't have to, you know, pay them to go after the quarterback or hurt somebody intentionally. He says, I ain't got to offer them anything. Guys like James Harrison and company, they enjoy it. But he never said the word, you know, injure or, you know, this is all in reference to bounty. So my question is you know, anything he probably would have said after you know, a win-at-all-cost kind of guy quote, was going to be highly scrutinized, especially once a guy like Florio got a hold of it. Should he have worded this better, or is this just a situation of Florio just extremely blowing this thing out of proportion here?
It's exactly that. Look, this is, you know, coaches in the NFL, 32 jobs. We spend time scrutinizing every word that Mike Tomlin says, and every coach in the NFL is under that microscope. I think we do. We try to do a reasonably good job of knowing when guys are being facetious or funny and when they aren't. And as you pointed out in the post, sometimes the written word, you don't see that, whether it be on Twitter or an email. When somebody's actually speaking versus writing, the context may be very different. There's no doubt in my mind that Mike Tomlin was going for a few yucks there. He was, you know, said some of these things, knowing the environment that we're in, figuring this is a relatively user-friendly crowd. It's a William & Mary crowd, and he's being inducted into the Hall of Fame. So, you know, he went for a couple of yucks, and it has now been blown way out of proportion by Mike Florio. I've got no problem with anything he said. Or should he have said it? Well, I don't know. He's a big boy. He can probably take Mike Florio's heat. And, Dave, we talked earlier about media relations, and it's events like this that, you know, come to your point of why the Steelers might want to try to keep some things at arm's length is because it seems like nothing good comes out of a lot of things that you say. And Mike Tomlin, I'm sure he can take Mike Florio's heat, but this is, as I said, a user-friendly crowd. He was going for yucks. Maybe it didn't play out perfectly. But I've got no problem with anything he said.
Yeah, and I pointed out in my post, if he would have stopped right after I'm a win-at-all-costs kind of guy and said nothing about the bounty after that, and if Florio or anybody for that matter, if they wanted to take that further, they could have, you know, turned that into something, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Look, as I said, 32 coaches, every word's going to be scrutinized, and if you bring up touchy or relevant topics – like the bounty stuff, like headhunting, you know, and even just as you said, saying I win at all costs and breaking NCAA rules, then, you know, people are going to critique you and criticize you. It comes with the territory. You know, Florio got his 5 more minutes on our show because of it.
Yeah, absolutely. He's getting a ton of traffic too, because he loves, and Florio, I think, is, you know, is a Steelers fan. So, but he knows that if he posts like this, especially on Memorial Day when there's no news out there, and that's when this went up by him, but, you know, he knows what he's doing with this. And hey, you know, my job is to get traffic to my site. I'm not going to try to twist things to do it all the time. Now, I have been known to craft up some pretty interesting post titles, you know, which a lot of us like to, in the blogging world, like to refer to as link bait. But you know, things that make you think. But I think in this situation here, when you go back and you look at the actual tape, you look at the context in which Tomlin said all this, he was just going for the laugh there. And if anything, maybe he shouldn't have thrown the bounty stuff into it and all, but
yeah, that's some touchy stuff,
you know, and it is touchy, and I bet that's what pulled Florio's trigger on it too, and I bet next time, even though Tomlin's tucked away in what he thinks of a private of all private settings in at William and Mary, you know, college there, you know, YouTube and video, boy, they get around. Now, you would have never heard about any of this, you know, 10 years ago, let alone 5 years ago, probably, but now every word that a person says is out there for scrutiny, and that's just what Florio did. So watch the video out there if you're listening. It's up on SteelersDepot.com. Make your own judgment.
Dave, in terms of news around the league, there's not a lot going on. We've seen most teams now have had at least one of these OTA sessions. Not too many major injuries. We talked about Peters with the Eagles hurting his Achilles again. Hakeem Nicks broke his foot with the Giants running, but he seems to think he's going to be ready for training camp. I don't know if, you know, it's basically June 1st right now, so I don't know if a broken foot's going to heal in 2 months, but it does sound like that's not a serious injury. Anything else popping around that caught your interest?
You know, we were talking about the Patriots and that bevy of wide receivers the other day.
Yes.
Anthony Gonzalez, they released him. So
wow, that's a quick decision on Anthony Gonzalez. His star has fallen fast over the last 2 years.
Yeah, former first-round pick of the Indianapolis Colts there out of Ohio State. Great route runner. I think injuries just took a toll on him. You know, sad. The kid I thought had a lot of promise there. Coming out, and evidently the Colts thought the same thing, draft him that high, never could stay on the field, but that's one less wide receiver that the Patriots, you know, have in that mix now, so that explains maybe a little bit more of that now. Of course, the obvious thing we're going to hear now is why won't the Steelers go after Anthony Gonzalez? Hey, this guy can't stick with the Patriots, you know, former first-round pick cut. He's not the type of guy I think is a special teams warrior. So I really can't see the Steelers even taking a sniff at him, to be honest with you.
No, and let's wrap up with this idea. Surprised that any of the guys the Steelers released, basically most of the guys have not gotten contracts, meaning Chemo and Farrier. Does that surprise you at all?
No, I think they, you know, 9 times out of 10, the Steelers know when to cut bait with these guys, you know, and they build through the draft. They sign their own free agents that they want. And no, I don't find it surprising. Hell, Dennis Dixon, although he wasn't cut, his contract basically expired. He can't even catch on somewhere. Curtis Painter gets a job before he does. And Chemo, you know, that knee was balky at the beginning of last year. There's reports about the arthritis and all like that, you know, in that. So that's not surprising. Farrier looks like any time now. We could hear that Farrier's scheduled something with the Steelers to announce his retirement. The only really guy, you know, other than William Gay, a free agent that was not brought back to sign elsewhere, was the tackle that ended up signing with the Bucks that didn't even see a snap on offense with the Steelers. He was just a body there with him. So no, I don't find it surprising at all that Brian McFadden and these guys haven't caught on yet at all.
And I at this point, you have to assume it's unlikely because we've talked repeatedly. We're not talking about teams with 80 guys now. We're talking about teams with 90 guys. Now, maybe somebody gets hurt and you don't want to pay up for a guy like Ferrier or Chemo unless you have some kind of need, like the Steelers may at some point have a look at Max Stark. So it's not done for these guys, but it sounds like Ferrier may be looking to call his retirement official. Chemo's the guy that I'm a little more interested in. I kind of thought somebody would have signed him, but again, maybe we'll see when they get to camp, see what they have, and take a look at him.
And we also don't know what he's asking for either. You know, we don't know if maybe somebody put the feelers out on him. He says, "No, I'm gonna sit here and rehab and let this knee, the heck with these OTAs and me having to get that knee drained and all like that. I'll just sit back until an injury happens to the starting left guard somewhere, and then maybe I can get, you know, an extra $1 million here somewhere." So, although he hasn't signed, it doesn't mean that he won't down the line. And we just don't know what's out there or what has been, offered to him as well.
Yep. Okay. Well, Dave, anything else that you want to touch on before we wrap things up? And we've got 2 days of OTA before we get back on the air on Friday.
Let's see. The only other thing, Max Starks expects to still be medically cleared come around training camp time. He spent a couple of days around the Steeler facilities with the doctors. And, of course, Cabali had the article last week saying that he still had not really heard anything from the Steelers. And I think that's going to be the case for a while now. You know, until this guy is 100%, really, as much as I like to speculate and as much as I want it to happen, there's really no use in doing that right now going forward until he is 100% healthy. So, you've got that battle going on at left tackle there. In fact, Ed Bouchette, I think, reported today, one other nugget from today, is that Gilbert did take some snaps at left tackle. So that both the tackle spots are going to remain up in the air through probably mini camp, and we'll get a better idea of how that's starting to shake out when training camp starts. But
him there, that doesn't surprise me all that much.
Yeah, and I've got a post up. Pat Kerwin talked about the big nickel, has an article up on CBS Sports, and I kind of went a little bit deeper into that as well, too. And, we won't get into that on the air, but I invite the listeners to check that out up on SteelersDepot.com as well, too.
And our last piece of breaking news, Terrell Owens, T.O., just got cut by his indoor football league team, as somebody said on Twitter, rock bottom.
Get your popcorn.
Get
your popcorn ready.
Well, as always, follow Dave on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow me at Hammer Speaks. Tweet us with any questions. You can email us, The Terrible Podcast, or our Twitter account is at Terrible Podcast. You can email us at theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Again, the donations keep coming in. That means a lot to us. Thanks so much for your generosity and support. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.